This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, thank you guys again for tuning in this week. We have another great adventure and conversation with another magician, someone who I spoke with when I was at Havana, Cuba, for Magic Cuba. This kind of wraps, well, not kind of, it does for sure, this wraps up the selection of magicians that I spoke with while I was down there. We've had quite a few that you've heard over the past few weeks, and this is going to be the one that will conclude that little series as we get ready to go off to some new adventures. So this week we're going to be talking with Chad Long, who many of you know, who have seen him perhaps at magic conventions around the world. I've seen his videos, many things about him. Very funny guy, very funny, and very silly, which is why I call him seriously silly, because he is serious about his comedy, much like David Williamson. In fact, he was heavily influenced by David Williamson, and he goes into a lot of detail about his relationship and having first met David and how he had influenced him in becoming kind of what he is and how he looks at and thinks about magic. And he really is kind of an off-the-wall thinker, both those guys, David and Chad then as well. But I know that you're going to be enjoying this conversation with Chad. And again, as I said, I want to thank all of you guys very much for tuning in and listening. And I also want to thank those who have made financial donations and pledges to the Magic Word Podcast. And as we get ready to head into 2019, there are a lot more conventions that I'm going to be attending. And I also have some ideas for some upcoming podcasts that I know that you're going to enjoy then as well. But if you have the financial wherewithal to be able to help support us, it would be greatly appreciated. Yeah, so if you could just go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you can click on a tab and you can learn about how to become a patron, whether that you're going to be giving a one-time donation or whether that you want to give a pledge through PayPal or through patreon.com. Your support will be greatly appreciated. And if you can't, then let me suggest at least that if you're going to be buying something or anything from Amazon.com, there is a link always at the bottom of our webpage. So just scroll to the bottom, click on the link. It'll take you then to Amazon. And through their affiliate program, we get a little bit of love back from Amazon. So I want to introduce our guest this week, someone, again, that I know that you're going to enjoy. And it was a lot of fun. And we had a pretty good conversation. I hope you enjoyed as much as I do. Please welcome my guest, Mr. Chad Long, here this week on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we are in Havana, Cuba, and actually, even more importantly, we are in what's known as Salon Vedado, which is History Hall, and we are surrounded here in the Hotel Nacional by portraits of a lot of people down through history who have apparently come and spent the night or nights here at the Nacional, and down from the 30s, 40s, and on up into the modern times, and surrounded by history. And right now I want to introduce another piece of history of someone who is important in our art, and that is Mr. Chad Long. Hey there, Chad.
Hey, Scott. How you doing, buddy?
Fine.
I'm surrounded by lots of famous peeps.
Isn't that something kind of cool?
Their pictures, yeah.
Yeah, there's Jimmy Carter right behind you. I mean, it's not just Americans, obviously. I mean, in fact, I would say Americans probably aren't even half the people who are listed over here for this thing. So it really is kind of cool.
No, it's not just Americans. There's Stan Musial, Betty Grable as well. Oh, those are all Americans. Never mind.
That's right. Frank Sinatra, Ava Gabor, Ava Gardner, I guess it was. So, hey, we're not here to talk about them. We're here to talk about you and magic and stuff like that.
And
that's kind of cool. And Cuba. So you are, it's the first time you've been in Cuba, mm-hmm. I assume. It's
yes, it
safe
is.
For a lot of us over here. We're here again for Magic Cuba. And those of you who are listening can go back and listen to some of the daily updates as to how the convention went, which was fantastic. I will point out that it was really not a convention or a conference so much as it really was a festival in which we were here to entertain the people. So it was kind of a cultural exchange and everything. So,
that it was.
And that's what you were doing. That's one of the things
yes.
I noticed. You know, you were entertaining people in the streets and the bartenders and mm-hmm. waitresses and just kind of walking around restaurants.
Yeah, it was fantastic. They were so sweet.
How did they react since they were Spanish-speaking?
They went insane.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you saw Mac was doing things mm-hmm. and you were doing stuff for people on the street. The waiter, it's like they don't get to see it a lot, apparently. You know what I mean?
Correct.
Live in front of them, and I think that's it just blew their mind. Plus, I think we're a novelty as well. I mean,
that's true. Yep. And then we also had offered Magic in some of the clubs, the public nightclubs, so that way they could see some of the things. And I know that you were involved in that. I mean, not just impromptu things, you know, along the way, but there were some things that you had done that were actually...
were scheduled, you know, as part of the cultural exchange and, you know, with fellow magicians and the public as well. Yeah, I did a show with Eric Mead and Chris Korn, my old buddies, and we had a great time. And that was in a nightclub or a disco of some sort, you know, and that we had a blast. So
it was one of those things that was not really built for close-up.
No, it wasn't.
It had some challenges.
Yeah, we were scared when we got there, and the owner... yeah, it was a really big room, and it was our stage and, you know, spotlights and everything. And we said, we know, we didn't know this was a platform or a stage show or a cabaret show.
Right.
We thought it was close-up and, you know, just a cross wires or whatever. So we didn't really have a lot of platform stuff. Were you there?
I was there, yes.
Oh, you were, yeah. So.
Yep. Actually, you did some on the platform.
I did indeed do some platform because I just got scared, and when I get scared, I go crazy. And you know,
you go to your fallback stuff,
kind of, yeah, and or just and maybe I learned this from Williamson or something. I think that the more scared you are, and it seems like the worse the situation, and it wasn't bad because Eric Mead came in and put his cape on and came in and went to bat for all of us and told the owner that we need to move all these chairs. We're going to bring them around the you know, make a little theater and bring it in really tight.
Much more
so
intimate.
They can see and, you know, see all of us. Of course, I didn't adhere to that. I just, when you get nervous, you know, you go 120% a little bit. And I think sometimes, not the crazy rack, but I mean, if you play it bigger, it makes it look better. It makes the situation seem.
Right.
You know, you look, I don't know, it seems like it is working better than it might have otherwise, you know, so. Yeah, so Eric goes, I did all that work and you're standing on the stage anyway, you know, but.
Yeah, because Eric did the thing with the coins.
The cylinder and coins, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then after he was finished, they introduced you, and you stood up and had done a couple of things kind of on the stage, which were more visible. We were already down there. Then afterwards, Chris brought it back to the close-up again.
Yeah, I pulled spaghetti out of my mouth.
That's right.
The, you know, the chewing gum and the coins.
You
I
know,
had a great time. I linked the car. I was in a Paul Harris mood, and I told the fellows backstage, I said, guys, I'm going to... They're like, you're not going to do Immaculate Connection, you know, with jumbo cards. And I hadn't done it in years. I just felt like doing it. I practiced on the plane with the little cards, you know.
Oh, so really? That was something you planned to do?
I used to do it all the time, you know. Yeah. And
I tell you a quick story about that. I was working the Magic Island one time, and I was doing that. This had to be 80s, 90s sometime.
You were doing Immaculate Connection?
Yes, I was. And getting great reaction, so much so that afterwards there was a gentleman and his son who hung back and said, can I keep those cards? I said, sure. They said, would you do the trick again? So I just did it one-on-one. And, you know, I came to that part, and as I was continuing to talk, you know, then I ripped it, you know, at the end, of course, what you have to do. And he was going, oh, I wanted it when it was still there and connected. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. And here you go.
Yeah,
and
handed it. Nice cleanup.
Yeah. I knew what he wanted, but you couldn't.
That's one trick you can get out of by pretending to rip, ripping them.
Yes.
We don't talk methods here, I guess, is ripping them apart, and then they can't, there's nothing to see.
Have you done a lot of Paul Harris stuff? I mean, was he a big influence?
I've done everything he's ever put out. I think I've done everything in all of his books. When I was a teenager, you know, I had all those books, and not just the trilogy, I had all the, you probably have all the books as well.
I do,
you know,
Super Magic and all of that,
all the individual volumes, you know, and I did every trick in every book, you know, for sure.
Did you ever meet Louis Simonoff?
Yes.
What was he like? Well, see, I assume he was a really creative guy.
I'm going to be an idiot. He passed away, right?
He did.
I mean that with respect. I liked him a lot. Yeah, he was really great. I met him at Gary Darwin's...
one of his clubs, Magic
Club
Clubs?
Meetings, yeah.
Wednesday night thing.
Yeah, and Louis was not in great health, but I told him what an inspiration he was. Boy, when I read... It was really weird to put a face... It was really nice to put a face to a name.
Sure.
Since I've read about him.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, every other page.
He did illustrations, is that right, too?
Oh, yeah, that's right. He did the illustrations.
So.
And, you know, Max Rock from Shoe is Louis Simonoff's. That's called Earth Shoes in one of Paul Harris's books.
I've been doing that for years, and Kozak does that. That's where I first saw it was Kozak. And he still does that.
Many times.
Mac does that. A lot of people.
I don't dare do it in Vegas. But... Mac uses a huge rock. You seen that? He turns that thing around and
yes, yeah, he doesn't dump it out. He actually
he gets the laugh.
And then he picks it up. And he doesn't even fit in the shoe.
He milks it. It's so good, boy.
Yeah,
yeah. So I
he
met
doesn't
Louis.
Just dump it out.
What's that? No, he doesn't. Yeah. But yeah, I did meet Louis, and it was great. And I told him what an inspiration he was, reading all those books and all those great stories that Paul
was. Was he living in Las Vegas, or where was he from?
Well, he was there at that meeting. I guess I don't know where he was living.
I'm guessing he was in Vegas, I think.
I'm pretty sure, never met him,
but I think so. Because I think it was one of Paul Harris's books, Las Vegas something.
Close Up, or, yeah, you know, Paul reveals some of his most intimate secrets.
Now, Reset, that was a coin trick? That was a card trick.
Reset was a card trick, and it was based on a Brother John Hammond, Brother John Hammond effect.
We're speaking Spanish too long here.
Yes, nombre es tan long de Bible Estados Unidos. Is the mago's nombre is Brother John Hammond. It was based on his underground transposition, I think it was called, and that's where Paul Harris got the Reset and really streamlined it and made it more commercial.
Right.
And easier, not easier so much, but more easy to follow, I guess. The plot was more clear with Paul Harris's Reset. It's a classic. I used to do it over. I used to do it 10 times, 20 times a night at when I was a teenager.
Restaurants
and nightclubs and stuff,
right.
And I worked at, you know, doing those. And I'm trying to think. I don't know why we're on to Paul Harris, except I just was, you know, I did Seductive Switch the other day for somebody. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, where you show a card and... This is probably boring, everybody, but
no.
You got to break out those old books of Paul Harris. I was just telling Korn and Eric Mead and that what a genius. Because they're like, why are you doing that? I go, I don't know. I'm in a weird mood. He was so far ahead of his time, Paul Harris was in the 70s, coming up those, you know, bizarre twists and, you know, all these different things. And
he still comes up with a lot of really good ideas. He's got a lot of really good ideas still. I mean, he's...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's fantastic.
I think he also consults for David Blaine, I believe, as well. But I know he has some other things out that...
Sorry, I'm smoking.
That are really good.
We're both smoking authentic Cuban cigars in this mind-blowing hotel in Havana.
Normally not a cigar smoker.
It's like a dream to me right now. I really can't believe I'm sitting here. And it's just so great, you know. I really can't.
Yeah.
What got me to this point, I can't even fathom. But anyway.
But here you are.
I am sitting here with you
in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I'm having a water. This water is fantastic. It's authentic Cuban water.
No, it's not.
You're enjoying a mojito.
I am having a mojito. You know, if it's a Cuban authentic, you'd probably get sick.
Oh, that's a good
point.
What
they were saying is, you know, you need to have bottled water because our stomachs are a little bit tender to some of the water here. So
the show was great, and Eric made it work, and the guy was mad. He didn't want to do it, but then after the words, he said, oh, that was fantastic, and we said it wouldn't have been, you know.
Yes.
But see, they were prepared for a big stage show, so as soon as Chris Korn, Eric went first, he introduced me, I did 15, 20 minutes, I think I ran long, actually, because, and then Chris Korn
did
his set.
Eric just did one trick.
What's that?
I said, Eric just did the one trick, and then opened it to you, and you kind of took up part of his time as well.
Oh, Eric just did one trick?
Yeah.
That's all he did?
I think that's it.
I think it is.
But he obviously didn't set the tone because then you went like four times longer than him.
I did, and I kept looking over
when
Eric, you mad at me? Yeah.
It was really
And then
good.
Chris Korn went, and then did you notice at the end when he goes, Magic Cuba, and he yelled it out at the end of Chris Korn's set, and then a huge troop of dancing people came out in minimal clothing, I might add.
Yes.
And did the most, it was so funny and so surreal, and they were so sweet.
On that small stage, And then the singer came out.
On this tiny stage, and they all did a huge dance number, you know, and and it was elaborate, wasn't it? I mean, you were there.
Yes.
And then a singer came out and one song would have been perfect because then she kept going and she sang a bunch of songs. And by that time, people were already getting on the buses and stuff. And
because although it was open to the public, it was pretty much taken over by the magicians.
Taken over by the magicians. And
well, now you work other conventions as well. I just saw the TAOM that
here
in Houston.
Yeah,
and
that was a lot
and getting
fun.
Around. How many conventions a year would you say that you get around to? You know, as far as what you work. I mean, you don't really attend a convention unless you're performing or lecturing.
Been lately, though. I like that. It was really neat to go into a convention the other day that I wasn't working. I don't remember what it was now, but it might have been. It was Blackpool. I went to Blackpool the other day. That was February.
Here we are in November the other day.
We're almost to the next one. Okay, you know, but... I go to the session, although I always end up doing something.
Never been to the session.
It's fantastic.
That's in the UK.
That's Joshua Jay and Andy Gladwin's convention, who... are doing great work with conventions like bringing back Magi Fest, which I'm sure you've been to.
I have, one of my favorites.
Yeah, I used to do it when Jeff Hostetler run it.
Yep.
And I think
and the
he has a little hand in it maybe, but I'm not sure anymore. But they're doing a great job with one of the first conventions I ever worked in the early 90s was Magi Fest, and it was a lot of fun.
Did someone see you actually like working at a restaurant or something and then say, why don't you do a convention, or did you solicit work?
I truly don't remember how it started, to be honest with you, but... I don't remember now. I was doing magic at a nightclub, I think, maybe, and somebody said, "Oh, we have a club." I was in Daytona Beach, and somebody said, we have a club. This is about 92 or maybe a little earlier, 90 or something. Maybe 89. I was at I went to a contest, I think, is the first thing I ever really did. I went to a magic contest in like 87 or 88.
And you won?
In Florida State. I think I did win, actually, but I'm not sure. Yeah, I did.
Because you're from Florida originally, or did you move to Florida?
I don't think I deserved to. What's that?
Were you from Florida originally, or
did
you move
to Florida?
I was
born in
Florida,
okay, yeah. Then. But that's how I got into the magic world of lecturing and performing.
So you weren't born in the circus, the Ringling Brothers Circus in Florida?
No, I wasn't. No, they were a half hour from me. You know,
really?
In DeLand, Florida. Yeah, that's where their headquarters was at the time. But
yeah.
But I always enjoyed that. I was, you know, when I finally started, my first lecture was for like, you know, seven people, of course, up in Tallahassee. I drove 5 hours or something, 6 hours, and I went and I did it, and a little workshop, and it was a lot of fun.
Right.
When I first started doing it, though, I figured all magicians knew everything you were doing, so I would explain the tricks as I performed them. A guy stopped me in the middle of the lecture, the guy that booked me, and says, Chad, because he knew me. He saw me perform before at the nightclub in different places. He goes, Chad, just stop right now. And maybe it was a few tricks in or so.
Yeah.
He goes, just pretend like we're all laymen. By the way, there was about 20 people. It was a nice little magic club.
Okay.
And he goes, just pretend like we were at the nightclub where I saw you and perform the stuff that you do, you know. And you're right, you fool a lot of them, you know, and they enjoy it more importantly.
That's true.
So once I got over that, you know, I used to shake like a leaf performing for magicians. And so I would never perform for them. I would explain it while and a lot of guys still do that. You'll see guys say, hey, would you show me that thing? He goes, well, I'll walk through it. And then they go, you know, they'll explain it as they're doing it because they get kind of nervous just performing it. Obviously, I'm more comfortable in front of laymen, but I still get nervous in front of magicians.
It's the same thing like at the 4F convention, which I've seen some of the top guys be a little bit shaky. I remember even Roger Klaus messing up his own $100 bill switch, you know, and Bud Dietrich was doing something and he kind of got the jitters once, and it's like
that is yeah
because he's in front of all these guys.
It happens to everybody, you know. And that lets me know they're human at least, or they, you know, they were. And they were fantastic.
Well, when you're working in the trenches to begin with, like most of us, like at a restaurant, getting some really good experience, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what I always tell people, to get flight time. You know, you really need to work whenever
there's
wherever
no
that
better
you can.
Advice than that, Scott. What you just said, that's a it's not original, but I always say that in lectures, and they say, how can we become better? I go, the only way, really, is that you have to get all your moves down, obviously, you know, which, but you have to, like you said, you have to find a place to be bad, which is not my saying, it's a classic, you know, and what do you mean by that? And of course, it means doing magic anywhere you possibly can, or finding a spot that is a place that you can do it constantly, hours, like you said, you know. I wouldn't perform professionally until you're ready. That's not a good idea either. It makes a lot. It can make people, you know, magicians look bad. You know, if you go out, and I've seen a lot of guys, if you're not ready, don't do it. But find a place you go to nursing homes. Go to the VA. You know, do places where people,
Rotary
like Michael
Club,
Finney
lunches,
said once, there's people
dinners.
Sitting around doing nothing. And you know what? That you could practice, and they would be so grateful. And, you know, and go practice on them. It screws up, say, I'll be back in a couple days. We'll do some more. I just would do a show every night. I know guys that did nursing homes, you know, and assisted living facilities, you know, places like that are dying for entertainment. You know, that's probably the worst way to put that.
Well, no.
I didn't mean that at all, but anyway.
Well, I think it's, again, good advice. That if you will go wherever that you can, and a lot of people say, well, don't do charity shows. Well, at a certain point, and I had this conversation, I think, with Michael Godot the other day about a similar thing, that, sure, you should get flight time. But as far as charity shows, if you've done 40,000 shows, you don't necessarily need to be taking a charity show unless it's something that you believe in and really want to do. But at the initial beginning, when you're trying to find, as you say, someplace to be bad, you do need to take these kinds of shows, whatever, if they're free, just wherever. It's like being a street magician. You're doing it over and over, and you can tell whether that it's going down or not because of what's in the hat when you're done.
Yeah.
You know? But there's got to be a better way of saying it. Find a place to be bad. You know, you need to find
that's
a place
only,
to practice.
I only say that because that's what I heard when somebody
that's
told
what
me
they,
that.
I heard that,
but
too.
But once you get your stuff down a little bit, there's nothing wrong with working restaurants, you know what I mean, for tips or whatever, or places or bars. We'll let you, a lot of them won't hire you, you know, but they'll let you do it for nothing, you know. And I'm not saying that, but once you get your stuff down, that's what I'm getting at, and I know you know this, is that you can be as great as you possibly can in your living room or your bedroom, sitting on the floor in boxer shorts in front of the mirror.
Sure.
Hopefully practicing magic. But until you get out there, you can't see what's going to go wrong or what's going to get great reactions or how they're going to react, what the bad angles really are, you know. And and you're going to get busted doing things. And but, boy, it makes you so good at not getting scared anymore and not becoming scared. I'm horrible at I'm not very eloquent, but I know what I mean. And I know that now nothing scares me as far as layman. You know, you can go into any situation. I've been with black tie parties, or I've been in biker bars, you know, or doing magic. So, I mean,
right.
So pretty much anything, you know, once you get all that flight time in, like you said, and you've done it for a few years, you know, then nothing surprises you and nothing scares you anymore.
Well, but I would think that there would be some situations. Let's say if you're going to be performing for the Queen, have you ever performed like for royalty and that
not,
kind of a thing?
I did once, but it was a cousin of a Scandinavian princess and the niece of who was married to the
Okay,
he's on a cruise ship. Yeah,
but I would think that if you were going to be performing in some situation like that, where that they would be judging you, that I'd
yeah,
be
I guess
a little bit,
like,
or the Pope,
okay,
or somebody. You
I
know?
Meant more on a realistic. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah, not really that, but.
Now, went back to restaurants. When you were working, you know, you had mentioned we'll work someplace for free. I would not encourage people to go out and do that because there are other magicians trying to find jobs.
Well, that's
for
a good
pay,
point. I did it a lot, but yeah, that was back in
the same thing like with cruise ships. You know, years ago that someone was telling me, don't ever offer your service for free to a cruise ship. First of all, they're not going to take it because they do have a budget, you know, for magicians. They want professional acts because everybody and their sister saying, hey, I'll do it for a free cruise.
Yeah.
And so that's not what they want because then they're going to be getting, you know, they're going to get what they pay for.
No, that's a good point. I mean, I guess what I'm saying, because when I was 18 and 19 and walking around,
sure,
you know, bars doing magic, they weren't paying me. I did work for tips, you know, so I guess I'm giving advice that happened when I was couldn't get booked, you know, for money. I was basically the only magician in town, so I wasn't stealing a lot of work from magicians. You know what I mean?
Right.
I see what you're saying as well. I agree with that. But there are some places you can get better and get flight time in without taking people's gigs, you know what I mean? But
and that's the thing I think about restaurants, first of all, that they're not going to be paying a professional fee. I mean, they're going to be paying $25, $35, $50 an hour or something,
yes,
or whatever,
yes,
it's going to be. So you're not making a lot necessarily. You're making more than what the wait staff is going to be making. But it gives you an opportunity to, you know, to do a lot of shows, certainly, back to back, and find out what works, and your timing and choreography. Because the two things I always say that you cannot practice is timing and misdirection. You can do everything that you want in front of the mirror, just like you're sitting, you know, sitting there at home,
yeah, absolutely,
practicing
that's a
whatever
really good
in front
point
of the mirror. But the timing and misdirection, because you can't misdirect your own eyes in the mirror. And as far as the timing goes, you have to calculate for laughter and applause. First person I ever heard say that line was John Carney, you know, about I woefully underestimated how much time that I was going to be out here because I hadn't anticipated laughter and applause, you know.
That's
basically
really funny.
Or the
yes
lack of it, you know.
Yeah, the sound of one hand clapping, is that the classic? Yeah, but it's, yeah. That's really funny coming from John, you know, but because I don't think that happens a lot with him now.
No.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So.
But we've all had that, you know.
Right.
In fact, here in Cuba, a couple guys have had that, and they would be the first ones to laugh about it. You know, it was an impossible situation. A couple guys were thrown in. I'm sure you talked about it with them.
Well, I talked to John Archer about that situation, and
was he a pro, though, wasn't he?
He was. You know, that someone had said, Joe Crisillo had said that here with the repressive communist government, basically, they don't have much freedom to do anything except to drink, dance, and make love.
That's
and
right.
And when we came in to do that magic show, we were intruding on those three things they really wanted to do, that dynamic, basically, there. Of picking up each other and everything. It's like, and in addition, of course, we were speaking English and they couldn't. So, and it was mostly
working against him there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I thought, as you say, John did a great job.
To recap, if they don't remember, he was thrown into a situation where there was a nightclub, pounding music, young people dancing, drinking, and just partying. And then, you know, and then suddenly lights switch off, the light goes on.
It's magic time.
It's magic time. And they were just, some of them were just, it was a shock to the system, you know.
Yeah, even though there were signs around flashing on the big screen, Magic Cuba.
It didn't matter.
Yeah.
And guess what? It was talking and very loudly talking, and the party didn't stop. Essentially, for a lot of people on the outsides, you know, around the outsides, and John just kept going and did his whole act.
Well, he kept doing little asides also.
Yeah, for us, he was doing some great asides. He goes, "What do you say
I'll be here for the next week.
I'll be here all week. My name's John R. I'll be here all week." He goes, "Which is what it feels like. What's going to feel like for the next 10 minutes?
Yeah, next 10 minutes, I feel like I'm here all week.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And but
have
boy,
you had situations like that?
Oh yeah, not where I've had to say what. What did John say at the very end? He goes, "Boy, you guys have been a great audience. You've been a challenging audience, and clearly you won." Boy, that was great. He knew it when he walked out, and he was perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had that at some banquets, you know, where they didn't stop talking. I've seen a lot of guys that you know that have had that happen. Giovanni Levere, I was at a show with him, and Bill Hurst has had it happen to him. You know, he was working, you know, 500 people there, and only two tables in the front were watching, you know, and the rest were just talking. And he got booked again because the owner or the CEO or somebody saw him do it, and I'll let Bill tell this one day, but Bill was, they called him and said, "You are fantastic. We'd love, we have another event." And he's like, he was stunned. He goes, okay.
Yeah.
He goes, "I'm not being, did you, you were at the show last, you know, a couple nights ago?"
Yeah.
And they said, "Yes. And we loved how you did your entire show, 45 minutes for those two people, you know, the two tables who are watching.
Watching.
People, and we want you again. That's a pro to us. And we loved it, the professionalism." And he was, you know, and then of course he did a great job the next time. And yes, I've had that happen. And I've seen Giovanni do that with, you know, Ken Turner is from St. Louis. He was on stage, I think, once, and I saw him doing it. And he was looking at the other, his buddy who was on stage with it, and they were laughing, going, "Wow, you know, let's just keep going." They're talking amongst themselves and just doing the whole show, and that's all you can do, you know.
That's right. You just
have to I suppose, but, you know, well, you're not going to get, it just looks really bad.
That's good advice, because I think there are some people who will be discouraged that something goes wrong in the middle of their act, they drop a thumb tip, or that they knock over a prop or something, and you just can't say, "Well, I guess that's into that show," you know, and walk off. I mean, they pay to see a show, and you're paid to be there for a certain amount of time. You know, you have to have some outs and backup material.
Yeah, that just happened to a friend of mine, and I think yours, it was a TOM that we were just at as well. And Shane Cobalt was there.
Oh, yes.
And Shane was on stage. Did you see that? And it was a huge, immense stage. And everybody did a great job. Krissa, you know, killed it, you know, with Krissa Lucy
Hendricks,
Darling.
Yeah.
And I think, Kyle and Misty crushed it as well. I thought they were great. I'd never really
every
seen their full show.
Every act was great on that bill.
And then Shane, it was just such a big room, and he was doing he had a good thing going, and he sent off his did you see him send off his card fountain? And Shane just went, "Well, can't recover from that. You guys have been great." It was his ending, you know, the thing just goes flying. I saw it go off behind him. He hit the button or something in his, you know, pocket.
Right.
I said, "What happened?" He goes, "I hit the button, and the thing just, the whole fountain." He was going to do some things, pluck some cards or something, you know.
Right.
But it happens to everybody, so.
It does.
Has it happened to you? Have you had a show like that, or? Except you, right?
Except me. No, I have had some things go wrong, certainly. I remember doing a thing that was an idea that was from Carol Fox, where that I had selected the wrong volunteer. And that's when I learned the importance of audience selection. You don't want to select someone who really doesn't want to be up on stage.
Sure.
Because
was
they're going to be
recent,
or? Oh, this was back when I first was getting involved in the 70s, you know.
Oh, okay.
And I was working outdoors in some festival or fairgrounds or something on a flatbed trailer back kind of a thing. It's just I had selected some lady from the audience, and I had a jumbo card, you know, in my coat pocket ready to have the selection. And the idea was kind of like an invisible deck, you know, where you fan your cards and you're going to have the name of the 4-H or 4-Hearts, you know, is on the thumb tip or something. So I fanned it. You know, first of all, I said, "Hey, let's... I need a volunteer. Do you want to come up?" And she didn't want to come up, and no. And she said, "Come on, let's give her some encouragement." I kept, you know, and so she came up on the stage, and I did that. And there was only one thing. When you fan it out, you're just looking at that your you know, thumbnail. So, and then
that's right, because they're blank except for the,
There's no blank. It's just, you just fan your hands like you're holding a deck of invisible cards.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so they see nothing except.
Yep.
Okay. And so then I just...
they didn't play nice?
They didn't, you know. So then I was getting ready to reach in and pull out the card, you know, and I said, "And what was the card you saw?" And, you know, it was supposed to be the 4-Hearts. She said, like, the Queen of Clubs. And then kind of crossed her arms like, "There you go, magic boy. You know, I didn't want to come here to begin with." It's like, "Oh, okay." And so I kept reaching in and pulled out a deck of cards and did another rising card trick. You know, I say, "Card's not here." And I shuffled to the top and did something else.
You got out of it.
I got out of it. But the point is that I thought, you know... I'm glad, number one, I had the ability to have some outs, and also the wherewithal and the presence of mind to actually do something different rather than just being discouraged to say, "No, that's not the right card I was thinking of. I was thinking of the 4-Hearts, thanks a lot, set out," you know, and not having... So I had some sort of a surprise ending, but it was not
the Queen of Clubs, you know.
Yeah,
exactly.
But it wasn't the ending that I had anticipated.
Yeah.
But it was just, again, I had learned about the audience selection, how to... You don't also don't want
somebody
saying no.
Somebody just talked about that here in the lecture, saying they look in their eyes and can tell, they see this, you know, the if they're going to work or not. It might have been Rob Gould, I'm not sure, but...
Rob Gould might have talked about that because he was talking about people having to do with being hypnotized.
Oh, okay, so that's a whole different thing. Yeah.
Yes, right. You've never done any hip, I guess, have you?
What's that?
Hypnosis? You ever done any hypnosis?
No, I've dabbled with it, of course. Have I've you? Got a lot of books on it. Mm-hmm. No, I was very unsuccessful.
Yep. Much on mentalism.
What's that?
Doing much on mentalism? Ever do any?
I love mentalism. Okay. Yeah, mm-hmm. I do dabble. I say dabble. I do a lot of mentalism stuff. I gave a whole mentalism lecture at Blackpool. And I lectured at Mindvention as well. Have you been to Mindvention?
I've been there several times. That's
So I've been there a few times. Yeah. I loved it. I just lectured there a couple years ago, and I did all mentalism. That was a lot of fun, yeah.
Is it comedy mentalism, I see?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Kind of like what Dave Cox was doing?
I've got some stuff out that's comedy mentalism, pretty much. I have some serious mentalism, but I always play it comedy, you know. Mm-hmm. I did a recent thing with Ron Pink, he likes
Ron,
it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's fantastic. I love Think Pink, and we did a new video. I shot some footage for him at Mindvention. They re-released it on Penguin with my touches and different ideas that, you know, Weber has given me and to share, of course.
Yeah.
and so we re-released Think Pink video, mm-hmm. with some, you know, like an extended version, director's cut type of thing, you know, so
right.
That was really fun. If you do a center tear, Think Pink is fantastic. Do you do a lot of mentalism yourself?
I do. You know, with Banachek.
Are you mainly? That's right. Are you mainly a mentalist, actually, Scott?
No, I'm not. It's just that I have always done magic, but because of my relationship and business relationship with him, that some of that's crept into my repertoire, basically.
Yeah.
So a little at a time, I've added more and more mentalism, but I don't consider myself a mentalist. I remember doing a show for the Mensa group one time, and they wanted a mentalist doing straight mentalism.
Yeah, they requested it?
They specifically requested it. I thought, this is going to be a tough group. And it was just the opposite. I did.
Yeah,
it was the same thing like when I was performing magic for the NASA engineers. I had some of my best quotes, you know, where you fooled a whole room of engineers from NASA. You know, because, again, these people think logically, so it's easy to bring them down the path. And because they'll never backtrack through that, and Mensa people and engineers are the easiest to fool.
Sometimes they look for the most complicated direction of things, and
right.
A lot of the things we're using are very subtle.
Occam's razor, you know, should be something that's the most obvious. And if you've obfuscated that properly and given them other avenues to think about,
sure.
other than the obvious, then they can't backtrack into
that. That's interesting. I think they go into it thinking in the wrong direction of methods, And I think they go in thinking methods, period. And a lot of stuff is it's been worked out. That some of the, not stuff I've thought of, but
yeah.
where we can concentrate on the presentation because you make the method as simple as possible. Isn't that what Einstein said? But not simpler, right?
Yes.
So they're looking for stuff that's not even there. You already have information before they even realize it, and now it's all presentation. So what's mm-hmm. fooling them is patter, really, you know.
That's correct.
So I mean, there's nothing to backtrack, but. Yeah, I find that type of audience, you know, you would think they'd be really difficult, but they're not.
Right.
Kids, teenagers, they're the ones that are hard to fool, you know, if they're in the audience.
I don't like doing children's parties because,
I don't do those anymore.
They're difficult to fool, you know.
I love doing, I used to do magic for kids all the time, of course, when I was starting. But they're the first ones. I was doing, can we talk methods on here?
You can.
Oh, yes, yeah. So I'm doing, what's that, Invisible Palm Aces. In fact, I did it here. You know, you pretend to palm a card into your hand, and you show nothing in your hand, you put it down on the table.
Like rub-a-dub aces?
Yeah, I told Williamson the other day, I texted him, I said, I had my Murray moment, you know, where, remember that thing with David Williamson where he was on British TV, and
yes.
he goes, you've got two cards that are stuck together with tape.
Yes, exactly.
And David's like, instead of freaking out, he just went... Everybody was blown away when he did it, when he actually went with it. He just said, okay, you busted me. You know, he goes, that's my career, Murray. You know, to you, it's a card trick. David peels him apart, you know.
Yeah.
Gary Plants had made that for him and overnighted it to him.
That's a tremendous story.
Yeah. And so
it's on YouTube, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then, of course, he met him
he
years
the guy
later.
Back, yeah.
Yeah, that was great. And but I did that the other day. I'm doing Invisible Palm Aces where you put a card down. It's in one of the Paul Harris books.
Uh-huh.
And you put a card down on the table. You show the four aces. Put one of them down. The other ones you apparently grab. You show a magician can hide the card in their palm. You know, you've seen this before. And you put it down on the table, and it's sitting there next to it. You're spreading the double that you put on the table, you know, very subtly.
Yeah.
And the adults are going, holy, screaming, right? Profanities. Yeah. They're going mental. One kid is standing on the side. He goes, "That you've got. There's two cards there, and you're spreading it, and you're pretending you." And I was like, going, "Great, thank you." And I told him, "Here, finish this for me, right?" And I gave him the cards.
Of course, you have to go with it.
What's that?
You have to go with that.
Yeah, I mean, he was. I just looked at him and I go, wow, that would really work. I have to try it that way sometime, right? Of course, he was right, you know. But,
yeah. Well, he's also at eye level when he's a child, level, you know, looking
I'm
at
guessing
that.
None of my doubles would fool him. Mine don't fool at bird's eye view, is what I mean. I can't fathom my chances.
Well, speaking of David Williamson, you know, that he's someone I wouldn't consider a children's entertainer, but he entertains the heck out of children.
He told me he loves doing kids' shows,
does
you know.
He?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He loves, I say doing kid shows, loves doing magic for children, you know. I mean, he's a big kid himself.
Like in the circus and everything.
Sure,
so, yeah.
When he was doing the Disney ships, and whenever he does those, he does a lot of magic for kids and loves being a goofball, and I think he's never going to be past 10 years old himself.
Well, you were saying earlier at dinner about how you thought he was like your favorite magician in the world.
I would say that, probably, mm-hmm. I mean, I think he's certainly...
Do a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I think, every time I say that somewhere, I'm not saying it because when I first saw David... It was like 88 or something in Daytona Beach. They brought him into a magic convention. Harry Allen and Irv, the Daytona Magic shop, they had a magic convention there. And they brought in David Williamson. Gary Kurtz was there. Norm Nielsen. Amos Lefkowitz. All these people I'd never heard of. And I saw him. And, you know, that's a list, you know, when you're, 18 and you see these guys for the first time. And,
sure.
But I didn't know who David was. And he just blew my mind. And I thought I was good until I saw him. Mm-hmm. I worked at a nightclub in Daytona. And I went to the magic convention, and I'm standing there at the registration. It hadn't even started yet. There's this tall guy in jeans and a T-shirt, and he was getting his registration stuff.
Yeah.
And he goes, only thing I need is a big bag of lemons. Is there a grocery store, you know? And can I have to get it, there were no Uber. He didn't know what he was, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm standing there, and I go, I'll take you, right? And he's like, oh, great. What's that?
Yeah. Let's go get in the car. We'll go get
some. Yeah, I had this crappy, beat-up, rusted. You could see the road, like the Flintstones, through my car. You could see I had a hole in the bottom. Little in the floorboard, you know? And it was rusted on the outside, you know? And
well, the salt air from Florida.
Yeah, that was the right. Was it? Yeah, that and no money. But, you know, and so we're, and David goes, oh, great, perfect, you know? But I didn't know who he was. I knew he was going to be in the show.
Yeah.
I had no idea. He was that good then, you know what I mean? And he was that crazy then.
Right.
And so we're walking in the parking lot to my car, and I go, I said, I'll take you to the grocery store. We can get some lemons for you, whatever you need, right? And there's a parking lot, and he just knows what car I'm going to. There's several cars out there, but he knows which one we're going to.
That's your car.
And he sees it. And before we're way still far away from it. Yeah. He goes, oh, thank you so much for this. He goes, the only thing I can't do is I have a phobia about riding in cars. I cannot ride in cars that are like rusted or old or you know, because he was classic forcing my own car on me, right?
Uh-huh.
And I'm fainting now because I'm thinking, oh God, you know, we're gonna go to this old Buick, let's say whatever it was, right? And as I'm walking up, I'm like, David, that one's mine, right? I said, we're getting in that. He's like, I'm just kidding you. I knew, because I knew we were going to that. And then you see the street rolling by underneath. But. So we went to the store, and we got these lemons, and David was doing all this stuff, messing with people in the aisles. And, it was new to me. You know, I didn't know you could have that much fun just out and about.
Out and about,
Yeah. And there's this old man looking at peanut butter. We're in the peanut butter aisle. And this old man's looking at it. He's very old, right? And he's like, he's moving really slow. And David's standing next to him with me. And David's like, Chad, I see the peanut butter. Where the hell is the jelly? And it was right next to him. There was a bunch of jelly underneath.
Yeah.
And the old man couldn't get a word in edgewise. He's going, the jelly is... And he's going, I know, I see the peanut butter. He's screaming at the guy, right? He goes, where the hell? You think they'd have jelly right near him? Just stupid stuff like that. And he's driving this man insane, right? Because he's like, the guy's... And eventually David says, well, forget it. If they don't have jelly here, you know, we need to go somewhere else. We turn around and we walk away, and the guy's still yelling at us from the
street. It's back here.
Yeah, we can't hear him. It was great. And then I'm walking along, and there's this lady has a big bag of ice. And she's walking down the aisle. This is a few seconds later, a few minutes on another aisle. And I go, hey, I'm trying to learn. So I go, hey, where'd you get the ice? And she goes, oh, it's over the bend by the front there. And she walks away. And David goes, what are you? You're not trying to do a thing like I just did, are you? And I go, yeah, I guess I was. He goes, no. He goes, that's a real question. She's just going to answer that. He's teaching me how to do bits already,
Yeah.
He goes, no. I said, what would you do? He goes, I would say, what kind of ice is that? You know, or something like that. So, so that got me thinking. Yeah, it was just really silly, but it was fun. You know,
your first comedy lesson.
My first comedy lesson is
from the master.
Don't ask a question as a real answer. that's not a bit.
Yeah.
So we after we got the lemons, he took me to Pizza Hut, for taking him, I guess. We went and got a pizza, and I sat there for him. I well up thinking about that. You'd laugh at that, but I mean, it was such a great thing. Didn't know what I had then, you know? Truly the greatest magician on the planet to me, and I'm sitting there telling me my top chain sucked, by the way. Because he goes, who are you learning from? We talked for 2 hours, right?
Yeah.
I go, Larry Jennings' book. I've got the classic magic of Larry Jennings.
Right.
He goes, well, let me see. What are you doing? And I showed him this top chain that was in it. It was not good at all. He goes, who are you going to fool with that? Be honest with me. I was about to cry, right?
Right.
And so then he taught me his top chain and different things like that, all kinds of little tricks he showed me and things.
Right.
And then later, when I saw him perform, it was the best thing I'd ever seen. Scott, I'm talking, you know what I mean? He's doing his pencil through quarter,
right?
Where you lift it out with no switch, you hand it back and blow in everybody's mind, the cups under, you know, he's pretending to load the cups under the lemons under the cups for his finale, but he doesn't really have them.
Mm-hmm.
He lifts up all the cups. We're all expecting to see final loads. There's nothing under there because he was doing, you know what I mean? It was just great.
Yeah.
Taps the bag, dumps all the lemons out. He's doing, you know, the three coins, tapping his clothes with the wands and everything.
Yes, right.
He did all the classics back then, but he's having fun, and people are peeing their pants watching him, right? He stole a lady's shoe. He took, you know, just all this stuff going on. And so later he goes, now what do? Perform around here? I go, I was embarrassed. You know what I mean? Because I was trying to be funny, and I was kind of okay, but I go there. I've been at this nightclub for 5 years at that time. I say, I work down the street, David. Any chance you would come by after the convention, you know? When the day is over for the convention, come by, have a beer or something?
Right.
And because I had to work that night. And he did. I'm about, you know, 11 o'clock or so, he walks in. He's by himself. And he sat at this table. I kind of did magic at like a little blackjack table-looking table. Like
people would come to the table, to your table?
People would come to me and have drinks, and I would just perform all night. You
so
know,
it wasn't a bar where you worked. I mean, you weren't working behind a bar. You were working behind
a
really
I was paid to be there at this point. I've been there a long time.
But you had your own separate tables.
I had my own separate table, yeah. And you're right, and it was not a set show. I'd pull cards out of the wall then, and I would do flash paper coins and stuff, right?
Right.
Different things I would do. But until I saw him, I didn't realize that you could actually
improvise.
Have no rules, really, you know? I mean, improvise more, exactly, Scott. And so then I told the waitress, I'd known for years, right, because she worked there. I said, this is David Williamson. He's a magician from Ohio. And I said, can you see? And she goes, oh, can you show us something? David does a three-card trick, torn, restored, transpo. He's doing the coins. She looks at me, because here's a good friend of mine, she was. And she goes, Chad, you suck. Right? It was great. Because he's got the layman just going mental in there, right?
Yeah.
Honestly, I couldn't wait for him to go. I was like, oh, my God.
Sorry,
I thank God he didn't move. If he moved here, I'd be screwed. I'd
have
be done.
Move to Ohio myself.
Yeah, I would. I have to go to Ohio. But he taught me a lot back then. And
really taught you to improvise. I mean, really.
He did.
But you always liked comedy, and so that was something that, I mean, you're pretty much, you know, off the wall.
Well, I learned a lot from him, you know. So, yeah, that was my first experience. Oh, David did something really cool for me that night. So he goes, Chad, do something. He's looking at me. There's a big crowd of people there, right? And he points to the guy next to him, because you could smoke in there at that time. This is early 80s, you know, mid-80s, rather. And he looks at me and he goes, he points to this guy's cigarette box of cigarettes, you know, like a pack of Marlboro Lights or whatever, right? A lot of people smoke back then. Mm. And he goes, and he hands me a corner. He slaps me five or something after I'm doing magic.
Yeah.
And I've got a corner of a bill, and I'm going, I'm a newbie kind of, at this kind of magic. You know, this is David Blaine stuff right now that he set me up for, you know?
Yeah.
David had stolen a cigarette from this guy's pack because he was a little tipsy. Dumped out a bunch of tobacco. You see what's going. Rolled up, torn the corner off, gave me the corner, put the bill back in there, folded up, put the tobacco in, stuck it back in the guy's box and closed the lid, right?
Right.
I mean, this is Blaine material, you know? And David's, you know, so the guy takes out a cigarette, pulls that one out because it was kind of sticking out a little bit, you know? Lights it. David goes, hurry. You know, he's like, hurry, Chad, right? He's like mumbling that to me, right? Because now there's people watching, and I go, hey, can I borrow a bill from you? I take a bill from the guy. You have a five? It was a $5 corner.
Okay.
And the guy, I rip it up, and I rip it to a bunch of pieces instead of ripping the corner. David's like, what are you doing? He's mumbling to me, right? He goes, just give him the damn corner. He's smoking the cigarette now, you know? So I gave the guy, pulled off the corner that matched his. And I did the bill change. You know, I did that to nothing. It made the bill vanish. I go, well, it had to go somewhere. And the guy's smoking the cigarette. By that time, it just went right down to the bill and is now, you know, and it was just great because it made me look really good, you know. And all I had to do was vanish a bill and give the guy the corner that matched. So when he broke that cigarette open and David had loaded that for me and made me look like a hero, maybe it was like the best trick of the night, you know,
yes,
because after David had blown everybody's mind, he made, and then he left. And But we've been friends, you know, ever since. We talk a lot. He's busy now. He's always gone. But we used to talk every week and talk about magic. And he'd call and say, all right, what do we got? You know, we'd work on tricks together and things. Mm-hmm. And some stuff we'd practice for the ship, you know, or even before then, we worked on tricks together. We had shows coming up, and we'd try some. We did one. We worked on a trick for like a week, and then when Halloween came, I had a show for Merrill Lynch. He had a show for a big thing in Ohio, and then after we both tried that trick that night, and it was a lot of fun. And then we debriefed each other after the next day and see how it went, you know. So I love stuff like that. I love talking to magicians. I love Skyping. You know, I don't do enough of it, but
right. Now, as far as working ships, the kinds of things that he's doing, obviously, is it going to be for stage? He's not doing close-up. Have you worked any ships?
I have done a couple of them, yeah.
And they usually
Ship, too, but it was called the Big Red Boat, and it was mainly a family ship. But I don't think that's not the one he's on. He's on the luxury flagship. You
Magic?
Know.
I think it's called Magic?
Is it the
Disney
Magic?
Magic or something?
Yeah. I was on one in the early 90s. And,
did you do stand-up or stage? Or?
I did stage. Mm-hmm. I did a family show, and I did a kids show. Mm-hmm. I was replacing a magician who may listen to this. He's a friend of mine who was consorting with a guest.
Yes. Okay.
So he was reprimanded and he was kicked off.
Asked not to return.
He was asked to leave for 3 weeks and then I filled in for him. So I did that.
But when you're performing, because I think of you being a close-up, kind of a parlor guy, but you know, not somebody that's going to be for 3,000 people.
No, it wasn't even that many. It wasn't, mm-hmm. but it was in like in the disco, and it was on the dance floor, I think, maybe the stage. I don't remember now, but
you remember part of what was in your set?
But I was doing Rocky, and I was doing Vanishing Bottle. You know what I mean? Coke mm-hmm. bottle or something. I did the linking cards on that. That's where I did it a lot. Was the jumbo linking cards, Immaculate Connection? I did that.
Uh-huh.
Stuff like that. I did Lincoln Rings, the Whit Hayden routine, I think.
Yeah, four-ring routine.
The four-ring routine, yeah.
That's great. Yeah, you know that with...
I didn't do those together, the Immaculate Connection and the Lincoln Rings.
Of course, right. The first time I saw Immaculate Connection done with jumbo cards, that really rocked my world for the standpoint of thinking, hey, you can do a close-up trick on stage, jumbo, and think about, okay, if you can go small, go large, you can have large things go small. And it kind of opened my eyes to different ways of looking at magic. You know what I'm mm-hmm. trying to say? Because I had always, of course, just thought that was a card trick. And then when he made it in a jumbo trick, I thought, well, there are other kinds of things that are small that you could really expand to be.
That's what I like about Miser's Dream. You know, I used to toy with that a lot, too. And, you know, and that's a trick that is kind of smallish, but plays loud. You know, so it can play. It plays big because
at Jeff McBride. You know,
yes,
that's just a great routine.
Absolutely.
And he does it just silent, so he could do it worldwide because he's not mm-hmm. talking.
Yep.
You know, he has a child come up in the audience and they bang the thing, and it's very funny, and he makes it look fresh every time. You know, when he's laughing like, oh, this is the first time this has ever happened.
Yeah,
you know, kind of a thing. So I think it's important also to be fresh. You know,
to be fresh.
Fresh.
Oh yes,
when you're performing, to make things seem as if that, even though you have done it many times, as if you've just come up with that on the spot.
Yeah, I say that in a little essay that I wrote a long time ago. I say that's true. You're absolutely right, Scott. Is to think about that they're seeing it mostly for the first time, and you know, so if you just phone that in, you're not giving that experience that they deserve. You know, like you remember the first time you were fooled and your stomach fell to the ground. You know, that's how they feel every time you do it. A trick for them a lot of times, you know, and so if you don't give them that, you know, if you just blow it off like it's nothing, they're not going to, it won't make it special, and that's how you do something for the thousandth time and make it seem fresh, is like Jeff does, or that, you know, all the guys do that.
Lance
Burton,
Matt King, I mean, these guys have been doing it all the time.
You know, Mac was laughing at that, you know, the girl signed the back,
the card, it makes
it, and boy, did it look like he, you know, like she really screwed up, and he's done that thousands and thousands of times, and boy, he's perfect the way he did that.
Yeah, I've talked to him about that before, about how it is that he does something in order to pretty much assure that 98% of the time...
Yeah, he manufactures that moment.
He does. But he had to do something special for her because she didn't understand Spanish. And I wondered how he was going to be doing it. I knew what he does, and so I watched closely. I know what he did to make that moment.
Did he actually run his finger on the back of it? Like, here, sign your...
Yeah. He did.
It was subtle. Nobody knew.
Yeah.
Boy, did the whole crowd,
they swallowed it.
Boy.
I mean, he got the biggest laugh, I think,
when
in the evening.
When she turned that around and she goes, you know, they went mental. It was great.
Yes. And, but as he was talking to the rest of the audience, I mean, he was very clear to her. He was holding that deck, you know, with his finger, you know, and the pencil.
Yeah.
You know, the pencil.
Yes.
Which is a good way of doing it. That is just very, very funny. And I, What would be a good tip that you would
give? He killed that night, by the way. Just as a quick aside, you know, he was a little wondering how it would go with the Spanish. And
right.
Boy, they loved it.
We had a little bit of a dilemma one time when he had somebody come up and he said, you know, there was a 20, what would they call, kooks or convertibles
here. Yeah, CUCs,
or a $100 bill. He said, I could do it with a 100, but I wonder how this is going to work, you know, with a Cuban bill. And so he thought,
with the size.
Different size and all that. So he's like, I think, you know, I'm here to try something different.
Boy.
And you kind of see that. The mental gyrations he was going through of whether I should do it or something is comfortable. And he took the not the easy way out. I mean, he made it.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, and came out just a real hero, you know.
I mean, 100's funnier also.
Sure.
And the 20 is less valuable. I there was a lot playing against him there that he was. Yeah, you're right. He was thinking about, and then he was thinking about the size and the.
Yeah.
And then the legality of signing a communist
bill.
Yeah, that was funny too. Boy, he just rocked it. And Michael Godeau did as well, of course, but.
What advice would you give to people who are wanting to write comedy or do comedy? I mean, some people are just not funny, but they want to do comedy, or some people want to add comedy to their routine. What would you suggest? Is there a book or is there a formula or something?
I like what Michael Godeau. Did you talk to Michael about that?
I did, yeah.
Because I think I learned a lot from his workshop as far as, you know.
Writing comedy?
Yeah, of taking everything.
It's methodical
and
formulaic.
All their expectations, write down what are our expectations of a situation. And and then on the right side, you put the exact opposite of that. You know, bride, like the wedding. What's funny about the bride, she goes to the wedding. There's cake, there's this. And then the bride doesn't want to go. They have nachos instead, or they have, you know what I mean? Or, whatever he's saying, you put the opposite. I love stuff like that.
His was a beautiful formula because with that you can pretty much write something and be ready to perform it tonight. Because as he and I were talking on the podcast, was about the script writers, the joke writers, I guess, you know, for talk shows, because they've got to look at the morning's news, what's funny, how can you write that and make something out of it. And so, you've got to put something together now to work tonight.
Yeah.
You know, on the
seeing things, I think, and exaggerating them, you know. Williamson always said,
But
he didn't like having a character. He likes, you know, being yourself, but at like turn to 11 or 120%, you know.
Right.
But like exaggerating everyday things to me is funny. You know, I do that a lot.
Right.
With the one gag with the envelope, you know, I thought that was funny because I'm literally saying a classic cliche of, you know, magnet. I don't want to say the thing. You know what I mean? That bit.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Yes. Very funny bit.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing that John Archer was doing then, too, of course, that he had used that Fool, Penn, and Teller with the... it's got a lot of built-in lines. You know, here's something. This could be something for you. Or, you know, here's something.
And that's a classic. I've seen that done, you know, when I was a kid, you know. And he added it to a bank night, and it's very funny. It's the built-in pattern for his effect. And it's comedy by itself. You could make... Just saying that pattern makes you funny.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Right. But are there any books or anything that you know of that you can think of that recommend or you have on your shelf?
I've got a lot of, I do like books on creativity more.
Like what?
Comedy. Do I suck at teaching comedy. I know what's funny, you know, and I know how I can be funny.
You don't talk about comedy in your lecture?
Kind of. I just...
What do you say?
What's that?
What do you say?
Well, I think you take traits of yourself. I'm a nervous performer anyway, you know, and I don't know if you see that, you know. I mean,
you get like twitches. You kind of keep moving
around. And I'm not
around,
making
you know,
it, but I think that makes it funny, you know.
It does.
A lot of people say that if you're a serious performer and you do something out of character, that's funny.
That's true.
You know, Tim Conover was a very serious performer, you know, and Eric gave a great lecture on him, a great talk on him, and Tim would be serious, 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 and then suddenly he goes, you know what, I'll empower you with this cookie, or, you know, and he would take a bite of a cookie, you know what I mean, things like that, and that was hilarious, because he would never use in a business suit.
Like out of character.
Yeah. You know, Guy Hollingworth once, this is what I mean by doing things that, like, this is what Michael Godeau talks about, the unexpected,
right.
You know, assumptions about a person or their personality or, you know, the props they have. Like Guy Hollingworth was in a tux and he pulls his sleeve back and he's got a Winnie the Pooh pouch wrist purse on him and he dumps out four coins, you know, unzips it.
Yeah.
But when he pulled his sleeve up, we we died, you know,
right.
because he's so sophisticated in his accent and everything. And then he pulls his sleeve up, and there's this Winnie the Pooh bright orange thing. He unzips it, and he dumps some coins out, and he goes into a coin routine, you know. Didn't even mention the purse. We just, it was, you know, that's pretty funny.
Well, it's like Michael Weber one time. I saw he had a business suit, and he was on stage and doing something very proper. And then he said, well, I'm going to roll up my sleeves. And then he pulls his jacket up and then takes off his cufflinks and rolls up. And when he does, he's got these sleeve tattoos, you know, one of those things you put on.
Oh,
it looks
yes,
like a hosiery
yes.
or something. So, it was, you know, I'm not saying anything about it, but it was something that looked so out of character with his button-down look, you know, and executive.
Mm-hmm.
And he pulls his back, and he's got these big sleeve tattoos on both arms,
yes.
you know. And he carries on. It's very funny.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think that's what I do, is I take my own personality traits and mm-hmm. and use that as comedy more than, you know, as far as writing lines. I mean, I don't know how I... I mean, I've got I've got some comedy books at home. You know,
mm-hmm.
Mike Bent has a great book on comedy.
Jay Sankey had one out.
Sankey had one. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've mainly I like creativity books, like, you know, writing prompt books. I use that a lot. You know, I write down a lot of ideas mm-hmm. every day.
You carry a journal?
I use Evernote, or I write notebooks too. You mm-hmm. know, I write them on my phone as well.
And when you do come up with an idea, do you use your phone just to kind of record some ideas?
I do. I have a lot of voice recordings.
What do you do with those? So, like, do you go back to the end of each day or
hundreds
each week?
Of them.
I
should.
Categorize them, or do you just kind
of
forget about
sit there. I do forget about them, but...
It's kind of like waking up in the middle of the night, and you've got this wonderful dream, and then when you record it and you read it the next day, it's like, what the heck did that mean?
Yeah.
You know?
I have a pillbox. You know those pillbox reminders thing? This
sure.
is... I don't know what, you just see things in comedy. You start thinking differently and you see things differently. This all applies to creativity as well, coming mm-hmm. up with new ideas.
Right.
You just see things. Me and Danny Garcia were walking through the dollar store, you know, and we were going to do a project together, you know, tricks we thought of at the dollar store, and just walk through and kind of guerrilla style film it and pick things
yeah.
up and come up with stuff, you know, that way. But,
well, that was
just thinking differently. What's that?
That was something that John Cornelius said, that, you know, Home Depot is his magic shop.
Yeah, he's right. Yes, and it is. Yeah, I've seen a lot of stuff he came up with, you know, with that mm-hmm. tubing that looked like cigarettes.
Cigarettes,
and,
exactly.
You know, and the gelatin mold that was actually caulk and all that stuff he used to
yeah.
do. Yeah, John's a genius at that stuff.
Yes.
Comedy-wise, I had a thing the other day. It's a few years I've been thinking of this. Nah, I don't want to. Never mind. Yeah.
Don't want to talk too much about what's in your act.
Well, yeah, so. But I have a pill reminder box, and I said, the SMT, it has like 7 days, you know?
Yes.
And I said, you know, I've never taken the pills in this box because I thought this meant someday, this meant maybe, this meant tomorrow, this meant whenever.
Okay.
And then by the time you get to those, they're already laughing, you know, and I just put that away. I love bits, mm-hmm. you know, like that.
Well, like you came up with that one idea, which you market, of the flash cube or flash drives, you know, the stretching the flash drive.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a trick. You mean
yes.
flash, the color changing?
What's that called?
Flash, yeah.
Flash, yeah. That essentially is like a paddle move or something. You know, instead of coming up to a table and, you know, using a color changing knife or something, I guess you're going to be talking about the flash drive, and then it stretches to a longer
yeah.
one then as well. That was a very clever thing. It seems very organic and updated instead of using knives.
Yeah. Thinking of normal situations and making them ridiculous is a way to, you know, if you can think of exaggerated, you know,
things that don't
that
exist in nature.
Funny. Yeah, that makes things funny as well, or mm-hmm.
Exactly. Again, making large things small or small things large.
Yeah.
Going back to that same thing we were just talking about then earlier, that if you start thinking kind of, well, how can this small thing be funny? Well, if it was much larger, you know, then it would be. Like a bonsai tree is funny, you know, because it's just like a little thing. Well, like I remember there was a line from one of Woody Allen's movies, you know, that my father always wanted to have a piece of land in Ireland or something, and he was holding this little piece of sod basically in his hand, you know, and then at the end of the movie he said, and my father finally built on his piece of land, it was like a little dollhouse or
yeah,
something.
That's hilarious.
Yeah,
yeah,
you know, those
yeah
kinds
I love
things.
Stuff like that. Like at Magic Live, I the cookie thing, I do you remember, were you there?
Of course I was. I'll never forget that. In fact, there was someone who
but
had
I
said,
caught a lot of crap, but not
what?
Crap, but, well, people just didn't like it, you know what I mean, but most people did like it because it got a big laugh.
Yeah.
But
one of the guys said here, I said I was hoping that Chad was going to serve cookies to us. I thought he was going to do that bit. That was very funny.
Yeah, I just don't think I did enough on comedy for you on this. But, I mean, I think of stuff like that a lot, non sequiturs, you know, and
sure.
things that are funny to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I stopped trying to make things that are funny for everybody because you never can do that, really, all the time, for the most part.
Right.
I mean, I'd rather have... So,
the cookies I thought of like a few days before the that performance, and I went to CVS. I took an Uber and got the cookie sheet and bought
the TOM. That was the first time you'd done that.
No, Magic Live.
I'm sorry. That was at Magic Live. Yeah.
I had the little timer, and I'd wanted to do it for years, and I never did. I wanted to do it at the Castle.
You want to share that and explain what that? You want to explain the gag?
Oh well, yeah. I set a timer. If you were at Magic Live, you might remember this. I set a little kitchen timer on there, and I turn it for about 2 minutes. I go, sorry, you guys, this has nothing to do with this. I should have done this earlier. I don't say anything about it. I just click this little kitchen timer, little white one, with the thing that tick, 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 tick.
You know, an egg timer.
And it buzzes, like an egg timer. And I start doing an effect, doing a couple tricks, or I do one trick, and then the buzzer goes off right in the middle. I put the cards down. I'm right in the middle of a trick usually. The buzzer goes off, and I run over. Oh! I say, excuse me, when I walked out at Magic Live in the close-up show, I walked out and I walked over to the curtain, and I lifted it up, I looked under there, and I said, nope, and I clicked the timer for like 2 minutes, and nobody has any idea what I'm doing, and I said, that's sorry, just ignore that, it's not part of the show. Mm-hmm. And I started doing a trick, the buzzer goes off, and I said, oh, hold on, and I go over to the curtain, and I reach under there, and I put an oven mitt on, and I pull out a tray of cookies, with a cookie sheet, and I put them on the table. And that's it. I didn't do anything else with them. And I thought that was funny. But some people online were thinking that...
You should have done a trick with it?
Yeah. They said, Chad, you have to have something appear in the cookies or something.
Yeah,
or
manipulate the cookies or do some miser's cookie type of trick or something with it. No, it was just a gag, I don't think that people necessarily would get the idea.
It was a gag. But a lot of people, there was a thread started by somebody online, and it went like 3 pages, My friend sent it to me. He goes, yep, you've got haters. I'm like, oh, that's all right.
Yeah.
At
least
they're
talking.
I hated the cookie bit. It ruined the act for me, somebody said, right? And, everybody kept agreeing with them. And I went on there after about 2 pages, and I just, for the hell, I never do this. But I went on there, and I said, to be fair, I didn't get the cookie bit either, It was really funny. Then they all started apologizing to me, going, oh, no, I didn't think it was not funny, they were really nice, actually. Yeah, guess what? It's not everybody's cup of tea, but...
Well, and I think that's what comedy is all about. It's just like art of any other kind. You may enjoy abstract or music, whatever it might be. Different people, different tastes, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And also that I think you have to push the envelope. If you do something that's going to be what is expected, then it's not going to be funny, and you're not growing or pushing that into the next level. So if you do something odd, then someone else might do a similar gag, but they'll add to that, then someone else does, and you might have started in a different direction for cookie manipulation or cookie gags or something.
Yeah, well, Chris Hendricks saw it at TOM and immediately said, at the very end, now I do a bit with it. She at the very end of the show, when the card vanishes, I do Gary Kurtz's hypothetical possibilities where the signature comes back and forth, and the card vanishes at the end.
Yeah.
And I look and I go, look at a guy in the front, and I said, choose a cookie, right? And you kind of glance over to those, and he goes, the audience is like, no, right?
Yeah.
I just pick it up. I don't say choose a cookie, it's going to be in there. She goes, just say choose, and I look over, a cookie, and I look at the guy, right?
Yeah.
And I pick, and he picks the row of the cookie, I pick it up, and I go, I break it open. I take a bite. and I go, great choice. It was delicious. Yeah, exactly. That's right. It was very funny, But then the card appears in the shoebox or whatever,
sure,
the thing. But
well, it's one of the things you could do.
It's a callback to them,
Yeah, that if you have
it's a great idea.
The card, like the card in the coaster, and the beer mat.
Yes.
Type of thing. When you break it, there's a bill that you hold underneath there when you break it open.
Have you done that?
Several times.
It's great, isn't it?
I've done that at some bars sometimes, and that you'll break it open and say, this... the beer manufacturers will put these bills in things, an instant lottery.
You're blowing layman's mind.
Yeah, you break
it's not
two
even
or three
fair.
Of them. Oh, here's one,
You break two or three, that's funny.
That's right. And then on about the third or fourth one, I got a dollar out of this one. Maybe I'll get a 50 out of another one.
That is hilarious, because Bill Herz does something like that. He did it years ago.
Yeah.
He would roll up 100 and he'd put it in a Lifesavers thing, right?
Okay.
And they were under the counter at the time, under glass. He'd do this. If they're not, it doesn't matter. He's looking at it and he goes, can I have that roll of, and he's pointing, and the guy goes, oh, Lifesavers. He's picking it. He goes, no. And he goes, nope. No, over, right? He goes, it was just funny because I was like, what are you doing? He goes, up to left? Yes, that one, right there. Can I have that one?
Yeah.
And he switches it, of course, right?
Yeah.
He breaks it open. There's 100 in there. And the guy's like, what? He goes, I saw it on the internet. There's certain ones you can tell by the edge wrapper.
Right. Or just, the font they use.
But
or
the way he went, specifically, the guy just picks one up and he goes, no. Put that one back.
Yeah.
It was great. Really sold it. And like you're doing, I like that you break three first,
sure.
know. No, no. And the guy's like, what are you doing? You're mental? You're insane, right? And you go, no. And yeah. There's the 100 or whatever. Yeah.
Well, I've also learned a couple of things. One is that beer
that's
mats
really funny.
That are wet. Here's the real work. Those that are wet, don't they just bend. They don't break
well. Oh, yeah. Here's the real work. Yeah, exactly.
And if it is one of the thinner ones, they don't break as well either. The ones that really work well, particularly, are European beer mats that are the thicker ones. That German beer mat. Yeah, they will
snap. You can ask Dennis Bear about that.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And so that's one of the places I'm hoping is on my bucket list. I get to the Oktoberfest maybe this next year in 2020. Over there,
don't go in a drinking contest with Dennis Bear, that's for sure.
Well, I asked him about that. He said, Josh, you could come over and visit me. We'll go over to the, you know.
Did you do a podcast with him?
I have not. Well, I talked with him.
Oh, my God, he's great, isn't he?
Briefly,
literally
yes.
One of the best card guys I've ever seen in my life.
Well, you know, he's
life.
Also got an online resource for bibliography
or
something.
Yes, that is
not library. What's it called?
Something archive. It's called
Magic Archive or something.
No,
Magic Library.
Conjuring Archive. No, it's not.
But it's one of those things, kind of like Wikipedia,
so
that people
good.
Can add to.
I can't believe I can't remember.
Well.
I use it all the time.
Yeah, if you go back at the Magic on the podcast here and go to the website and just do a search for Dennis Bear. That's Behr. And with one S, I think, or two. Maybe I think it has two N's.
Yeah.
Anyhow, look for Behr, and there'll be something there. And I've got a link on that particular website, blog,
that
will go to it. But the point is that it tells you the table of contents and what's in each of these books, you know, in a magic library over history.
The best bibliography, it cites all the sources.
Yeah.
My notes are on there, for God's sake. He's done everything, you know. Mm-hmm. He'll have them all there eventually.
I think he's got OCD or something.
His
attention to detail is...
What a resource, though, to look
really
up things.
Is. Yeah, yeah.
Boy, doing the magic for all the people on the in public has been the most fun for me.
Have you ever worked at a festival before? This is the first... festival I've actually, you know, it's big in
Europe.
I did
the Louisville one for Bill Hurst.
Did you? Okay.
Were you there?
How'd that go? Because I know Lance and Mac were involved with
that. That was spread out all over the place as well.
Well, now that's an open town that really has embraced both Mac and Lance.
Yes.
When I was there for the IBM convention that I think was the joint convention. No, it was just the IBM, I guess. They were just welcome every place they went. I mean, they knew they were rock stars, you know, and this was their hometown, and so they really appreciated it. So I would think that the festival would go over well, although I don't think that financially they did too well, because they've not had one since then.
Yeah, Bill mentioned that as well, like much like this one, I guess.
Yeah, correct. But I understand that overseas, that festivals are huge things. And when I first heard about that. Remember the Essential Magic Conference, the EMC? They had a fellow who had spoken about festivals and how to arrange. That's the first time I'd heard him talk about that and about how successful they are, you know, in Belgium and wherever else, because magic is appreciated as an art over there.
EMC was a good idea. I almost did that, actually.
Be one of the presenters?
I did, yeah. I didn't do it, but I was close. I missed the cutoff.
Oh, okay.
Luis said I was really close to being on it. He goes, you're on the short list. I'm like, well, considering there were, 36
30.
People.
Yeah.
It was a pretty long list.
And they did it for 3 years.
Yeah, I have the DVDs are great. I love them. I think it's a wealth of information.
It really was and is. The amazing thing is that it was cheaper to attend than it was to buy the DVDs, and the DVDs came with your registration. So in other words, if you paid, let's say, what was $150 or whatever it was going to be, you know, that you can attend live, and you can also text and, you know, people that was in live time, you could ask questions.
$99 or something?
Something like that.
Yeah.
It was like, but the point is that the set of DVDs that you got with it then later were also for sale, but it was like $200 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it cost more than the registration. You know, so
that's right. That's really funny
that you could actually sell your DVDs and get your registration back. You know, and then some. You know, but and then surprisingly, that it grew a little bit. And it was only a 3-year project because Luis Matamatos had said, "I'm going to be in it for 3 and out. And if it works, fine. If it doesn't, fine. But I'm committed to whether it makes or loses money." And they didn't have many people. 200 the first year, and maybe like 50 more the next year, and maybe another 50.
Yeah.
It did not grow as I thought that it would.
No.
I just didn't understand that. I always thought, it's time for a cyber convention. I would think that we could be able to do something like that, you know? Listen, I want to thank you very much. It's been great.
I tell you what, I can't wait to come back here. I know that, I loved it here.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
had fun with you and hanging out today, going to the Hemingway house
seeing all the
people and
me.
Doing magic with everybody. Scott was mistaken for Papa Hemingway, and that was a lot of fun. And boy, it's just, I had no idea it would be this great. You know, the people are so
weather's
sweet.
Perfect
and
this time of the year.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yep. And the food was great. Restaurants were wonderful.
And they love magic.
So the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. What is your favorite phrase? What is it you live by? What is your philosophy of life? It doesn't have to be a word. I don't mean like abracadabra. I mean, what is your, when I say the magic word, what is your, what gets you going? You know, when you wake up in the morning, I mean, this is really kind of what drives you. It's like, before the end of the day, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to have this kind of an attitude, or what do you recommend, or what's your philosophy of life?
Probably, I always love the idea of learning something every day,
yeah.
And I think that's a great thing to do. If you can do that, keep the gray matter going, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I love to write every day. I think writing down, writing some ideas down, as it pertains to us and our creativity
right.
and magic, I think that, writing something every day, learning something every day makes you healthier, you know, keeps you going, keeps you more sharp, I suppose.
So keep learning.
Keep learning, I think. Yeah,
yeah,
that's it.
Don't stop just because you've finished with your schooling or whatever it is, or you've learned something. You know, I think that was something that Ossie Wynn said. I don't want to be the best magician. I want to be a better magician.
I agree with
that. Because when you're the best, you think, I don't have anywhere else to go.
I also think he's the best.
Pushing.
But, so, yeah.
keep pushing me better all the time.
He's right. It's so great. We're always students, you know.
Yeah,
John Carney considered himself a student. It's good enough for me, that's for sure.
Yep, that's right.
Know? But I tell you, Scott, I go to these and I can't wait to go home and just start practicing again and to get into those books and,
yeah.
and to, you know, it just makes it pumps you up, you know, when you see guys that are really into it and
the passion
really
that these Cubans had then as well.
Oh yeah,
that they absolutely love it and so much so that they don't have a lot of income and they don't have the ability the books and everything. You know,
I'm so happy. Even I know it didn't. Financially, it wasn't for them,
yeah.
I guess, for the organizers and everything. But I got to tell you, what a treat this was to be a part of this, to help these Cuban magicians, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they loved
so
it. They loved
too.
It. And it was the first time it's ever happened like this, you know,
mm-hmm.
and to have all these great magicians together for them and who they could have all the time they wanted with and things. Boy, that meant a lot to some of these guys.
It did. I'm glad we got
and
to
gals.
Be a part of that.
It was great.
Oh, gosh, I had one girl that, a young lady who had done zombie ball. Kind
yep.
of close up, you know, and then yep. Magic Mojito deal, that one, it was great. Well, again, Chad, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Scott. I had a blast. I had a great time hanging out with you.
Okay, pleasure.
Take
care. So with Magic Word Podcast, that was Chad Long.
Yes,
this
it was.
Scotty out.
Well, it's always a great opportunity to have a little bit of time to sit and have a quality chat with Chad Long, and I hope that you enjoyed listening to our conversation and learned a little bit as much as I did when we were talking. And I thank you again for listening to the podcast, and also that if you have not yet subscribed to our weekly newsletter, be sure to do that. That's on our website, so whenever that you will go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there should be a pop-up that will occasionally come up, and if not, there will be a thing that will say subscribe to our newsletter or something on the tab, and you can follow that. So anyhow, it's something just to kind of keep up with and let you know who's going to be coming from week to week and who's up right now and who's going to be on next week. And speaking of next week, I'm getting ready to head to Columbus, Ohio, where I'll be attending the annual Magi Fest put on by Joshua Jay and Andy Gladwin. That's always a great convention and a kickoff to the convention season, and this one has been sold out since November and will feature the likes of Juan Tamaras and Guy Hollingworth and Howard Hamburg and Jan Frisch. I believe Eric Mead is going to be there. Goodness sakes, just a lot of talent packed into one small place for a very short time. It's going to be a 3-day event, and I'll be posting daily updates on that. And more information, of course, will be in the newsletter that you can subscribe to. So thank you guys very much then for coming back and listening to the podcast here. We got, as I said, an exciting year coming up here in 2019. And look forward to having you come along for the ride. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to keep learning. This is Scotty out.